This FabFM Voice of the Douglas Shire podcast is proudly brought to you by Bendigo Bank, Port Douglas and Mossman, offering a full range of competitive banking products and technology you'd expect from a big bank with the personal service and care you'd expect from us. Drop into your nearest branch at Port Village Shopping Centre or Front Street Mossman. Bendigo Bank, the better big bank.
Okay, the medicine lady, Dr. Alex Bernhardi, is in the studio and ready for a chat. Firstly, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you. You're a very positive person, as you've told us before, but you seem to have a bit of an extra spring in your step today.
You think so? Thank you.
No, I just think you have. And it's partly maybe as a result of the think tank. That's my first think tank. I didn't get to all of it, but I certainly got a feel for the interest that's in it. And as we just said off air, I mean, to put it in some shape or form, people are really taking it seriously. Likes of elected councillors, senior council staff, general members of the public, it's all there. A Chamber of Commerce, again, it's all there, isn't it?
That's absolutely what I love about it, that the think tank has really provided a platform for, you know, to open up discussions in between the different parts of the community again. And obviously the fact that people indeed give up a good part of their Saturday afternoon does reflect that it is something that that the community really needs.
I think you're absolutely right, and you're doing a fine job, and no doubt you'll keep us informed of Think Tank number 5 when it comes along and all the relevant details. But well done. Before we get to our topic, here's a little bit of a question that's cropped up, because we've had this discussion a little bit before, and we talk about conventional medicines at times, and I mean, that's your past. You're a GP, and you've worked and studied in conventional medicine. You said, hey, let's look at some of these. And these are the words alternative, natural. We've discussed this. What is your preferred way to describe that? Because I know you don't like, I think, alternative
medicines.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's right. Medicine does integrate a lot of knowledge from different areas. And definitely a lot of everything that we practice does need to be evidence-based and according to science. However, there is also a lot of traditional knowledge, which is knowledge nevertheless, and has been proven, over generations, that it works really well as well, and that there are also a lot of good studies backing it up. I'm talking about herbal medicine, things that can be really well studied. So therefore, I describe the style of medicine that I like to practice integrative medicine, which means it is absolute 100% evidence-based, based on the systems that we are learning at medical university, but just widening the horizon a little bit and not excluding valuable other information that is out there.
We do have a lot of technology around us, certainly have in the last 30 or 40 years, that can do amazing things. But some of those proven methods that you mention are like thousands of years old, aren't they? Those people back, I'm thinking of the ancient Chinese, the ancient Indians, as an example, they seem to know stuff back then. And somewhere along the line, we sort of seem to have lost it. We've got a little bit clouded in our thoughts, haven't we?
Yeah, I think most of the problems come with that it is sometimes difficult to prove ancient wisdom. So in terms of acupuncture, we can just, for example, conduct some studies where we can then say yes, for this and this indication, acupuncture has worked, and that then gets acknowledged. But because we still don't know for certain how in detail it works, that's where this conflict then sometimes comes in. But it does not discredit, you know, a technique like acupuncture.
Good to discuss these things here at FabFM, and I appreciate your thoughts there. Our topic today, we've looked at some real in-depth stuff. I think this one, on the surface, looks quite a short and sharp one, but I've got a feeling it's a little bit more complex, as many of our topics are. Making change and the difficulty to make a change in our life and the lifestyles and then stick to it. You know, sometimes we do these things and we join the gym, you know, and we spend all sorts of money on a gym, and then we have, after about 6 weeks, we get a bit bored of it and it fizzles out. I mean, maybe that's not a good example, but we're not good at sticking to things and probably find change difficult.
Yeah, and that's why I really wanted to talk about it today, because often when I talk to patients, I hear, yes, you know, I've heard about that. Yes, I know I should do this or I shouldn't eat this. So the knowledge is often there. We do know, or we have a feeling that we are doing things wrong and we should do it differently. However, to get people from that step of knowing something is not good or something else is better to actually changing their habit, that is something that seems to be really difficult. And there is an explanation for that. And I think it is worthwhile sharing that it is a human trait that we struggle with adapting changes, because I think it does help understanding why it is so difficult helps to find the solution. So
in a change situation, you mentioned that sort of acknowledging a situation. I mean, is that the first step to say, actually, you know, I've got a bit of an issue here, I need to change something? Is that the very first step, just discovering or actually admitting to yourself that I need to make a change?
Yeah, absolutely. And with all education and programs and media and whatnot, there is no lack of information. If you look at, you know, the anti-smoking campaigns, people nowadays, I don't think there is anybody who does not know that smoking is bad for you, but still we see people smoking. So it is, you know, it is, yes, this acknowledgement, but then the next step to transform that.
That lifestyle change, which could be life-saving potentially in certain situations. So how do we do it, Doc?
Let me just take one step back, because okay. I really, really love the following analogy, and that's why I actually choose that topic, because I like that image that I want to give you so much. So I want to explain to you why it is so difficult for a human person to change or to develop a fear of certain facts. So if I tell you, look, if you continue to drink, you know, this amount of alcohol and just eat cakes and cookies every day, you will end up with obesity, diabetes, and liver failure. That's one thing. However, even if I tell that to you, I don't see that you break out in sweat or that you get heart racing or anything like that. And there is this image, and I did not come up with that, but I saw that, you know, when I looked into it, and I really liked it. So just imagine you are by yourself in the middle of a desert, and somehow there comes a lion, and you are fronting that lion. And most people would agree that your acute fear levels would be over the roof, and your heart rate goes up, and you're starting to sweat, and your flight and fight mode kicks in. That is the response that is in every person when it comes to an acute threat. And the thing is, what makes us being so fearful and ready for action is the realization that you are by yourself in the desert. There is a lion, and the lion is a dangerous animal, and the lion will attack you any moment. So these three factors all together, this acute situation, makes you ready for fight and flight. However, if we talk about lifestyle changes, if we talk about the dangers of smoking or the dangers of a really poor diet, none of these attributes is there, because nothing is immediate. You can eat that cake and you can drink that vodka soda or whatever, and you are not dead straight away. So there's that delayed time factor that makes it difficult. Then it is actually not only you doing this, but it's nearly everybody else as well, your neighbor and your friend and your mate and so forth. And it is not only one enemy. So it's not only the cake, it's not only the alcohol, but it is an abundance of things that are not good for you. So that's the analogy that I like to to use to explain why, with all that knowledge, that all these things will eventually kill us and make us, you know, having a really poor life quality, why we are not getting into that fight or flight mode.
It's an interesting one, and something that, as you say, you know, smoking, a lot of people smoke, and I've got to be honest, I've been amazed since I've lived down under, not just in Australia, but in New Zealand, how many people still do, knowing the warnings. But, you know, it is an addiction, as we understand, but you sort of think if somebody tells you that that's going to kill you, you would take some action. And it's an interesting point, an analogy that you make there. I like that very much. Hopefully you've got a bit of a solution for us, and we'll take some ads, we'll take a little bit of music and come back with that and see what you've got to offer, because, you know, this, as I say, could be life-changing stuff for some people, maybe on the verge of making that lifestyle change. Time to chat to our medicine lady again, because we are, you know, delving into some interesting stuff, one that we thought might be a slightly shorter and sharper discussion, but, you know, they never are they, Doc? There's always a little bit more to it.
Yeah.
Now then, let's talk about how to change your life. We've said, and we've discovered why people aren't good at changing. We've said if you're in a life or death situation, you'd do something about it straight away. But those longer processes, the things that might be killing us over a number of years, we find so much more difficult to change. Smoking, drinking might be certain examples. How do we do it then, Doc?
Look, there's probably no magic fix for that. But if you look through the different literature from all the, you know, smart psychologists, and there are actually lots of psychologists nowadays specializing in how to achieve change, because that is something not only on the individual level, but, you know, all things that are political and so forth. So the first important thing is that you need to really make sure that the change that you want to achieve comes actually from your own motivation. So don't even try to quit smoking or do anything else if you are not 100% certain that it is you who want to do that. That sounds a little bit trivial, but it is really important. If it is just because the doc says so, but you are not quite convinced, or your wife is in your ears, or your husband or so, that's not going anywhere. So somewhere you really need to find that motivation in yourself. And you need to ask your question, because that helps with the motivation. What is the benefit for me? So once you have a clearer picture of the benefit for you, if we stick to the example with the smoking, it could be, for example, that, look, you're saving all this money, or it could be, look, I want to be able to breathe better, and I want to be able to run around the oval with my son, something like that. So you need to have your specific goal, and it needs to be your own motivation that you are coming up with. That's the first really important thing. And then once you have found that, you need to make a plan. So you need to define your goal, but you need to break it up in many little steps how to get there. And best of all would be if you write that all down. So if I give you an example, if you would say from tomorrow on, I just eat healthy food. That makes it really difficult, because you haven't defined what unhealthy foods you are eating in the moment and what it is that you want to eat. So you really need to be precise. So your plan could be, I want to adopt a healthier diet, and these are the food items I don't want to eat anymore, and these are the food items that I want to eat instead. And then, that is, I think, one of the most important things, is you should pick the one change you are most confident in achieving. So if you have a list of things that you would need to give up, you have 5 unhealthy foods, don't start with the hardest one. Start with the one that is really achievable, where you say, oh, well, that will be easy for me. And you start with that. Make it in general easy. If, for example, we are talking about food changes, diet changes, don't have the things that you don't want to eat anymore, don't have them at home. When you go shopping, don't go shopping when you're really, really hungry. Go shopping when you have had a nice, healthy meal and you are full. That definitely helps. Go shopping with a shopping list then, where you have, you know, based on the goals that you have had set at home, where you have written down the list of foods that you want to buy. And definitely don't necessarily start with changes at times when your life is really, really stressful, because we just don't have a lot of capacities for these extra effort, and we are more destined to fail. And you know, if we have a failure straight in the beginning, that is, you know, it's not a good, it's definitely not a good thing. So do one step at a time, and don't, or look at the changes that you are picking at changes that you are likely going to keep for the rest of your life. Because there's no point to stop smoking for 10 days. There's no point in giving up drinking for 2 weeks. And there's no point in just having a healthy diet for 4 weeks and then, you know, going back to your bad diet. So you need to program your brain from the beginning on that whatever lifestyle change you are embracing, get familiar with the idea that you would love to stick with that until the end of your life.
Well, there you have it. So, I mean, in some ways, similar to maybe something you've done at work in terms of setting goals and trying to achieve something, but in terms of your own body, which ultimately is probably the most important thing we have individually, isn't it?
So
it,
yeah, it's definitely always the same system with changes in whichever areas you do apply them, yeah.
But applying them to ourselves, there you have it. And I like the idea of choosing the easy ones to get that little bit of momentum, I suppose, and because there's nothing worse than falling at the first hurdle, having to pick yourself up. Interesting stuff indeed. And I think, you know, so something that, you know, we often say not always rocket science, but we have to be reminded continuously of some of those simple things in life just to make that change. Dr. Alex, thank you very much. Well done again on the Think Tank. Now, we also briefly discussed off air about the brainstorming session that the team had at the last Think Tank. Lots of positives came out of that. So we look forward to seeing potentially along the line some of the answers and results that come out of that and maybe moving forward. So something to look forward to.
I definitely loved the brainstorming session, and I will bring all these ideas that we have collected on paper, and I will put them on the Douglas Wonders website, just as a little bit, you know, a list where you can go to. And I'm absolutely amazed with the quality and the really good ideas that came up, which are ticking all the boxes of, you know, they serve the individual, they serve economy, they serve the environment. So there were lots of good ideas in there. And I was really impressed with that.
Well done. Interesting times ahead. Dr. Alex Bernhardi, our medicine lady, we'll catch you next week.
Thanks, Gary.